Hello, hello everyone. Time to start. This is Espresso from the Interesting Count.
Good morning, everyone.
Hello, everybody. Jim.
Today we have a very exciting episode, and we are going to talk with Peter Pasma about the new Universal Ray Hatcher project, which has been the talk of the town for the last 2 days. Let's do a quick intro first and then talk a bit about the project next. So, June, why don't you tell people who the Angels Wing are?
Yes, my pleasure. Welcome, everyone, particularly to our new listeners. The Angels Wing is an NFT podcast show and a community of artists and collectors. And we are founded by international friends, Casper, Johannes, Presser, Robert, and myself. We believe that art has the power to inspire and connect people through shared experiences. That's why we are all here today. And our mission is to feature talented independent artists who has inspiring stories to share. And we like to mention that nothing on the show should be construed as investment advice. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Back to you, Espresso.
Thank you. Our guest today, as mentioned, is Peter Pasma. Repeat guest, very happy to have you back. Peter is esteemed generative artist, launched art on Artblocks Curated, lots of projects on FXHash. Background from the demo scene, a master at minimizing code. And yeah, also last time we talked about the January event, which you're heavily involved in, and that's a great topic. So people should go back and listen to that episode as well. It was lots of fun. But yeah, welcome, Peter.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Let's dive into the Universal Ray Hatcher project. Why don't we start by you giving us the story of how this project came to be. What was the background and idea? And also introduce what the Universal Ray Hatcher project is for people that haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, a while back, FXHash released a new part of their framework, an addition to the usual minting paradigm called FX Params. And to be honest, I was a little bit frustrated with how everything worked at first. And I wasn't sure whether any of it would be a good idea. I can give a very long explanation about parameter spaces and the exploration of high dimensional spaces and why you can't really capture that properly in the slider-based environment that we are given. And anyway, it doesn't really matter. So I started thinking, like, what basically my problem is that it feels a little bit restrictive to the effort that generative artists put in their parameter selection. There's a lot of interdependencies between parameters, different random distributions, and it all hangs together in a tight net. And the sliders, they just pull that apart and leave it up to the collector to figure out these interdependencies and whether some stuff even works or not. And in high-dimensional spaces, the chance that you hit a nonsense part of the space is actually quite big. I could get into that, but I won't. So I started thinking, what could be the least restrictive set of parameters for FXHash? What is the best parameter? It's code. Because, yeah, this is back from my demo scene days, but it's also a fundamental concept in computing science that code is data and data is code. It's at the bear of a lot of security issues in the web. 10 years ago, it was quite easy to inject code into websites because code is data and these websites would output data that you gave it. It's a very interesting concept to me that there's something fundamental about the ability to write code. I haven't really told this before, but the word universal in Universal Ray Hatcher actually, apart from being descriptive of what it is, also refers to the word universal Turing machine, which is a theoretical concept of the perfect computer in computing science. It's a mathematical model of a computer or computer programs in a sense. And it shows you can prove a lot of stuff with it, such as the halting problem. You can't prove whether a program would run forever or not. You can't figure that out without actually running it forever. Yeah, let me explain what the universal ray hatcher is now, because it might seem a bit vague. So I've made this ray hatching framework, and I've written about it on FXHash called Ray Hatching Evolution. I released several projects on FXHash with this framework, like Industrial Devolution, Geomorphism, even Nanopanorama is in a sense based on the ray hatcher thing. I have developed this algorithm already a couple of years ago. And one thing that I started to notice, especially after Industrial Devolution and then Geomorphism, is that a lot of the code between those two projects is at least functionally identical because it's the Ray Hatcher framework. And there is only a very minor part of it that is the signed distance function, which we'll probably get into in a bit, which defines all the shapes that you get to see with the ray hatcher, and the rest is just like details about how many lines to render, how wide they are, where the camera is, that sort of stuff. Geomorphism is a slightly improved version of Industrial Devolution. I decided I can actually write these formulas pretty small because I like writing tiny code, and this is not just for the reason of making everything tiny just for the sake of it, but there's also, I like math a lot, and I use a lot of math in my code. SDFs are mathematical formulas, and if I use shorter variable names, they're easier for me to read as mathematical formulas. If you've ever seen a mathematical paper, usually the variables are all single Greek letters usually, but it is readable if you are familiar with them because every letter usually indicates the same sort of thing. And I have this enormous list of functions that I use every time when I'm experimenting with the ray hatcher. And when I release a project, I take out all the functions that I didn't use. That's the reason why the universal ray hatcher is slightly bigger than my previous ray hatching projects. So what it does is, using FXParams, the person who mints a token of this project has to enter as a parameter a string input, and it's just a line of text, 512 characters maximum, and it contains the formula for the signed distance function that will be rendered using the Ray Hatcher framework. This allows artists who know about SDFs, and they're a lot more of those since about a week, and it allows them to pretty much create arbitrary 3D scenes based on mathematical formulas, and you can construct stuff with it. Like Stranger Than Q has been making incredible stuff like cities, spaceships, and it's quite brilliant. And in fact, I should give shout outs to a lot of people who are here that made some awesome art using the Ray Hatcher framework, like Jos. And I don't know if Ella already minted, but she's great at SDFs. Oh, Laurent made the moon footstep thing today, which is incredible. And yeah, I see a bunch of more names.
We have the opportunity to highlight some great work later on.
Yeah, so thanks for keeping me on track. There's a lot to talk about. So the minter, they enter the code, and using that, they become a co-creator. Shortly after I released it, I heard people call it like a collaboration machine, and I guess that's really what it is. I hadn't really anticipated the impact that it would have, and that it would at least dominate the gen art space for now, at least a week. I released it last Monday evening, I think. And yeah, the idea is that I've been handing out the minting tickets manually. People don't just throw random code into the generator to see what comes out without really knowing what goes on. Therefore, minting is only one Tezos, because I thought if people are investing the effort to mint something, learn SDFs, invest time to make complicated formula, I don't want to charge them for helping me, you know? So I just made it like a symbolic small amount. I could have made it zero even. And then the artists are free to sell it on secondary afterwards, which has been huge because the secondary of this project is basically a collection of one-ones in a sense. And yeah, it seems that the people recognize that and they're sold accordingly. FXS has this feature where you can split the royalties between the minter and myself. And it's a very nice feature. I wanted to set it to 50-50 because it seemed like logical, but then I thought about it and I only get one Tezos when someone mints this thing and they get everything on secondary. I set it to 100% for myself for that reason. I'm getting 15% and they're getting 85%. I talked about this with a few people and they all felt it was quite fair.
Yeah, I think this collaborative aspect is a really great part of it. Also a very new experience on FXH. We haven't really seen any projects that takes it this far before. It's so great to see. I see people working with the dev environment and sharing works in progress on Twitter, just if they were making their own gen art project from scratch, and then they mint the final result. It's really a big innovation in this sense. And I also wondered how you think about this. Is it a framework for making gen art, almost like we call P5 a framework for making gen art?
It's much more limited than that, of course, because in P5 you can make everything, including a ray hatcher. I didn't write it in P5, but you could if you wanted to. Yeah, it is in a sense a framework for as long as I keep the project open. It's everyone can mint stuff with it. And afterwards, I'm probably not going to take the dev environment down so people can play with it forever. The params exploration will be disabled after I closed the project, actually, because I thought that was a good idea. In hindsight, I might have well left it open, but it doesn't really matter. That's just on the FXHash side. Is it a framework? Yeah, in a sense it is, but I'm not sure if I want to open source it or anything so that people can create ray hatching projects with it after I close this project, unless I make a universal ray hatcher part 2, which I thought about because there's some stuff I like to improve. Johannes, you want to say something?
Thank you. So I have two questions in my mind. So first of all, I was concerned because I wanted to start some art with this, but everything was reserved by you. If I would like to apply to this, it works like that I'm showing you what I've done, and then you are giving me a ticket, right?
That's pretty much what I've been doing the past week.
This is super cool because then in the end, you are the curator and everybody else is the artist. I think this is super cool, but of course, it's a very high standard to hopefully get into the list of artists for this collection. Because I would expect that if I just send you a donut, you wouldn't accept this, right?
No, we have donuts, or I don't know if we have donuts, but we don't need more donuts. Just to start with, I've been doing this process manually for the past week, and it's been tiring me out. Just an hour ago, I tweeted that I'm not going to hand out any mint tickets for the coming couple of days, because the whole process of getting all these requests is, I almost don't get to doing anything else. And after those couple of days, I'm going to see what I'm going to do. We don't really know yet, but I will announce how that works. It won't stop minting, but it's just hard making this judgment every time. And it costs a lot of energy. Yeah, it's been hard making those decisions as well, because people have been also submitting some pretty experimental stuff. And if you put some random mathematical formulas into the ray hatcher framework, apparently the outputs are still cool. And that's true. I had never thought about that. In general, I would be looking for stuff that is clearly three-dimensional and is not full of rendering errors unless applied artistically. Because I heard some people like Lokmi, he has made some really cool distorted SDFs that are just like shards of stuff flying around, but it has this like amazing aesthetic, which we are, of course, we know him for. So it's been really hard. I don't like saying no to people. I'm going to say no to everyone for the coming couple of days.
So I haven't thought about this from your perspective, that it's also a lot of work to review this. But of course, it sounds reasonable that you're putting a lot of time into this so that in the end, all the results are looking awesome. And then I have another question. According to your source code, you are evaluating the string, right? And we both know that in the end, maybe somebody could insert evil code. Are you concerned that somebody is figuring out how to escape from this and is executing some malicious code?
Yes, I am concerned with this idea, and I spent a lot of time preventing this from happening. Seifert of FXHash, like the founder and the coder of FXHash, he spent, I think, all evening trying to break out, and it didn't work. So that's at least one person. For starters, it was like a blast from the past when I started thinking about this, because I started thinking about how do I limit the what people can do. The main thing is I want them to evaluate SDFs and nothing else. First, I limit all the identifiers, like variables and stuff. Your own variables, you only get two characters, one or two characters for them. And in addition to that, there's a limited allow list that has words longer than two characters in it, like all sorts of mathematical functions. That's one thing. However, JavaScript is quite a tricky language. And this was the blast from the past. I remember that there is a thing called JSFuck, and it is named after the esoteric programming language BrainFuck, which is a language that consists only of, I think, 6 or 8 characters or something. There is JSFuck, which is a similar idea, except it is a way to execute arbitrary JavaScript code using only a limited set of symbols, like 8 characters. No letters, just like square brackets, braces, plus, minus, just your regular JavaScript symbols. And with that, you can construct any code whatsoever. This is part of the universalness of code. Code is data. Data is code. I keep saying it. And if you're not careful, people can break out of that. So first, I started reading about JSFuck on Wikipedia, and I saw that it was like discovered on the slackers.org forum in 2010. And it suddenly hit me. I was part of that community back then in 2010, because this is one of the places where I got like my love for esoteric JavaScript features, like the weird stuff that JavaScript does. And this was in like a security context. This was basically about people theorizing how to break out of sandboxes, just the one I'm making in Universal Ray Hatcher. And I didn't really participate in the discussion about when they discovered JSFuck, but I remember that thread when it happened. And yeah, it was funny to be remembered about that stuff from many years ago. Anyway, I studied JSFuck for a while, and I discovered that the basic solution would be deny listing a couple of certain character strings and stuff, but it just doesn't work. There's always a way around it. However, SDFs only need numbers, and JSFuck is based on the fact that you can construct arbitrary strings and then use those strings to index the global object and access any code. And finally, you get to the function constructor, which accepts strings as code and code as data, and there you go. But if you can't construct strings and you don't need strings for SDFs, then you can't write arbitrary code. I checked which types of objects were available in the context within the function. They're like the array. Oh yeah, you don't get quotes, so you can't make strings that way. But JavaScript casts objects to strings very easily. However, they all use the toString method for that. And what I did was I overwrote the toString method in the prototype of JavaScript basic types, so that whenever the object would cast to a string, it would throw an error instead. So you can't create strings as far as I know. And I have a little function that turns on the trapping of two string, and then later turns it off because I need to convert some stuff to strings when I construct the SVG image in the end. I wouldn't have released Universal Ray Hatcher if I wasn't fairly sure about that last trick with overwriting the two string prototype. And I believe this is pretty safe. And fortunately, at some point, this project will mint out and no more new code gets added. Furthermore, of course, the code is publicly visible on the website Who from FX Hash team. And so far, I've not seen anything evil. Yeah, June, what do you want to ask?
Yeah, I wanted to ask, what is your vision for the Universal Ray Hatcher project in the future? You already mentioned that you have a second version already in mind.
Yeah, to slightly bridge that from the security discussion, this was something that some people discussed with me. Do you think that other people will be trying to make a universal something or other in the future? And because this is a big success and maybe other people will try it. I just want to urge people, don't try this at home. I'm a professional. Yeah, you have to be very careful. Although one thing that I heard somebody suggest was to let people enter like arbitrary GLSL code, which only gets executed on the GPU, so it can't affect the operating system, as far as I know, in any way. Allowing only GLSL would be pretty secure. Let people make custom shaders. But yeah, then the only risk is that somebody might burn their GPU if you like overstress it or something, but or crash the computer more likely. But about my own plans for the future for... Yeah, I got a lot of insights from how people are using this project and especially got a lot of comments with respect to the camera selection within the Universal Ray Hatcher. And I've given that a lot of thought. And yes, part of me wants to make a Universal Ray Hatcher part two, but I don't know if I should. I have a project for NFT Show Europe coming up that I need to focus on first. It might be fun to make something like that again in the future.
Yeah, I also wanted to hear about people's kind of experience with this project. And has there been kind of anything that surprised you in what people are choosing to do, like the SDF stage or other aspects of this? And also as a side comment, it feels very much like this is a great way for you to spread your love for SDFs with the wider community, which has been a big success lately. So any key takeaways on how people are using this?
I didn't even intend this project to be like as educational as it's turning out to be. I explicitly didn't explain much about what are SDFs in the documentation because I feared it would get really long. And so I kept it just to like technical description of the functions. So what was your question again?
Yeah, no, I'm curious about kind of key takeaways or impressions on how people are building their generative art using this.
I've seen a lot of weird code, like really weird. There's loop macro function that you can use in the code, and I've seen people use it to loop something once for no reason. And I've seen people call stuff with a huge number of arguments that don't do anything. But apart from that, I was very surprised at the fact that you can actually throw arbitrary functions into it and it still gives some kind of reasonable output that's got at least a little bit of aesthetic to it. But yeah, I decided that is a little bit too easy. Not that I want it to be hard, but I just wanted to show what you can really do. Yeah, there was one thing that Seifert of FX Hash did. He made this SDF for starters. It was like Cypher code for Peter Pasma, which was really cool. But he also wrote my name inside the code. And at first I was like, how did he do that? Because neither the word Peter nor Pasma is in the allow list and should go through the validator. And I was worried that I had made a mistake. And then it turned out that you can, in fact, use arbitrary words in the index of the repeat macro. And that's where he put Peter and Pasma. I didn't see that as quickly. So that was really surprising. He just wanted to greet me in the code. And similarly, someone wrote a very nice thank you in the code of the piece that he suggested, which was a rock, basically. But that does not, it's not the picture, it was the message that counted there. And yeah, I've seen a couple of interesting tricks, like definitely I will 100% admit that this type of code is actually hard for me to read if I didn't write it myself. I have to spend quite a bit to study on other people's code. And again, thanks to Hu from FXHash for putting down that awesome universal Ray Hatcher gallery website where you can easily view the code. But I haven't had that much time to study them all. But yeah, the stuff by Stranger has definitely been blowing me away. Just that was like exactly the kind of stuff that I hoped people would be doing with the universal Ray Hatcher, and he 100% delivered. That was cool. And I haven't looked at his formulas yet, even. I don't know how he made that city or the trees or whatever, but yeah, that's been surprising me.
Yeah. I was kind of at some point thinking someone should do like a top 10 list of SDFs people have used in this project, because there are so many possibilities, right? Lots of basic shapes to choose from, and then lots of modifiers to apply. So I'm curious to see what people are tending towards, in a sense. A question in that area is, are there any parts of the list of SDFs that you think are underrated or should be explored more?
Yeah, of course. I'm a huge fan of the corner function, K, that's inside the function list. What the corner function does is it makes a two-dimensional corner and it gives you the distance to that corner. This is actually a 90-degree corner, and this is the same as doing the intersection of, say, X and Y, because then you also get a corner of the X and the Y plane. And you would normally do that using the maximum function. However, when you do the maximum function and you intersect these two planes, you don't get true proper SDF. Because if you then try to inflate the result of this SDF, it stays pointy, 90 degrees, doesn't get rounded. And it should be rounded because that's how distances work. If you make everything slightly bigger in all directions at once, it will get rounded corners. And the corner function K is a slightly more accurate SDF of the corner that does in fact get rounded corners if you inflate it. And that makes it a super interesting function because it is also functionally equivalent to the maximum function. Yeah, you can do all sorts of cool stuff with that. You can make all constructions out of pipes with 90-degree angles and that. But actually, Espresso and Klaus Wilke both wrote amazing articles about SDFs. And yeah, Klaus's one is advanced about his own trousseau tiling SDF, but he explains a lot of cool and advanced tricks. And Espresso's article is like an overview or getting started with SDFs kind of thing. So they're really great companion articles. And I've heard from multiple people that they said, yeah, I read these two articles. Now it clicks for me. That's really great. Great job. I don't know if Klaus is here, but Espresso, great job.
Thank you so much. We will make sure Klaus gets the thanks as well. And yeah, his article is really great in that he breaks down the piece, as you mentioned, into the components and take you through the work process to get to the final result. So yes, I highly recommend. And I have to admit, I wrote this Getting Started article partly also to become more familiar with the SDFs and to make sure I understand them better. So it's been great.
That was also one thing that surprised me, by the way. Klaus is using functions, declaring functions in his code and then using them. And I knew that it was theoretically possible, but I didn't expect people to actually do it. This was one other surprising thing.
We also wanted to go into a bit more detail about individual pieces. And I know June has a favorite piece. Maybe we should start with that one.
Yeah. you know what my favorite piece is, right? Or everyone probably knows it. The BF made by Elsif, another talented generative artist. And probably everyone has seen it who is making SDFs right now. What is your favorite piece, Espresso?
Yeah, oh, that's a hard question. There's so many great ones. And I feel like every day I'm grateful I can wake up, immediately reload the gallery that who made and see the new mints, because it's amazing. I did open up this number 27, though, which is created by Peter, which is somewhere else. It's a cube with kind of rods sticking out of the center. This effect, Peter, this texture that you're applying to the cube, it's one big cube, but it's divided into lots of small sections with small indentations or holes in it in a very aesthetic pattern. So any tips for how to think about applying a texture like that to an object?
That one, I just loaded that also on my laptop. This is actually a variation on the Menger's cube fractal, for which I gave some demo code for it in the documentation. It actually cuts square holes into a cube, and I changed those square holes into cylindrical holes because I thought that would be nice. And then I just inflated the cube a little bit to make it rounded, which you can see. And this inflation doesn't just round things, it also makes things slightly bigger. And this causes the pattern of holes to interfere with the curved surface in a particular way that creates a sort of texture at the edges. And yeah, finally, there's holes, big holes in the middle of the cube that meet in the center. I just decided to poke some cylinders through those holes to, I don't know, give a bit more visual interest or something. And then I decided I liked it enough to mint.
So
yeah, that's the story.
Okay, so one keyword is inflating objects to make these kind of effects.
Yeah, and the Menger cube fractal. There's also, I think Inigo Quiles also has an article on his website about how to create SDFs for the Menger cube fractal. It is basically, the idea is that in 2D, you would do it like you have a square and you divide the square into 9, like 3x3 grid, and you take out the middle square. And then you are left with 8 squares that go in a circle. And for each of those squares, again, you take out the middle square. And you keep repeating that process in like your recursive fractal manner a couple of times. I think I only did it 3 times in this, or yeah, 4 times in this particular thing. If you do that to a cube in a similar way, you get the Menger cube fractal. And yeah, if you want to read about a little bit more about how it's constructed, the Inigo Quiles article, it's pretty good.
Yeah, thank you. That's another solid recommendation. Inigo has lots of great resources. And of course, his work is primarily in GLS, so you would have to translate it into JavaScript in that case. But still, it's a very good place to look.
You just have to look at the functions and the math behind it.
Yeah, and try to understand it and work with it for a while. But yeah, and June mentioned this piece by Elsif, the bear head. And curious to hear if there's any special tricks to make images like that, like combining shapes or anything in particular to keep in mind if you're going for one very specific look.
Yeah, Elsif's piece, that is number 47 for anyone who wants to look it up. It's called Fren. Beautiful title as well. And what it's made of, again, Inigo Quiles has a great YouTube video called Painting a Character with Maths. And in the beginning of that video, he shows how to create certain smooth shapes to create a head. You have to have a bit of feeling for it. I've also a little bit background in cartoon drawing, and I'm looking at this bear head and I immediately spot that it's made out of 2 ellipses. And this is a thing that you also like with certain types of cartoon characters. Think about Mickey Mouse. The face is made out of just a bunch of ellipses. And in this case, yeah, so if you want to combine shapes in SDFs, so an SDF always gives the closest distance to the nearest surface. And if you have two shapes, two SDFs, and you want to combine them, you have to take the minimum of those two functions to get the closest distance to either of the shapes. That's just the start of something they call constructive solid geometry. It's a way of modeling 3D objects. The other operation that you might want to know about is when you take the maximum of two SDFs, this creates the intersection. This is the space where both shapes overlap. For modeling purposes, you want to take the maximum of one shape and the negative of the other shape. What this does is called a subtraction. And you can like cut a spherical hole out of a box, for instance, if you want. Yeah, I saw some people talking about cubes in a Twitter thread that all seem to have that same idea, like to cut a sphere out of a cube. It's a cool shape. Once you can combine shapes with the minimum, there's another function provided in my framework called the round minimum. And it has a roundness factor or a smoothing factor. And this sort of smoothly blends two shapes together. And that's what ELSIF did in this picture a lot. So you have the main sphere for the head. Then you have a sort of flattened sphere for the snout. Then you have another little thingy for the nose. I think she makes eye socket holes first by cutting out spheres and then put in two spheres into the leftover holes again so that they're not like dark, empty, soulless eyes, but cute little teddy bear eyes. And similarly, you can put like flattened circles. I haven't studied the formula in very big detail, but flattened circles, spheres for the ears. And I hope, and I also didn't check that, but you can use the absolute function to create a reflection in space. And if you do that properly, you would only have to like put one eye and one ear in there because it would automatically mirror them across the face. And then ELSIF told me she couldn't get the mouth quite to work. So the trick is to put that part in the shadow. And I think that's about how it was made. It's really one of my favorite pieces from the entire set as well. It's definitely the first one that completely blew me away. Or I don't know if there were ones before it that also were amazing. There's been really a lot of great ones. I wouldn't want to say which one is the best, but this is definitely a top five material.
Wow, thank you. Yeah, that's great. And also, by the way, are all of these plottable?
Yes. When you look at Fren by ELSIF, it has a dark background and white lines. In principle, you can plot that. You need a black paper and a very good white fine liner. And anyone who's ever tried to do that knows that this is pretty hard to get to work reliably. And you would probably want to do two passes over the entire thing just to get white covering enough. Yes, they're all in principle plottable, but depending on each piece, there are a lot of challenges to actually plot them. Yeah, not in the least finding the exact right tint of paper and pen. And also if people used line widths, which are not commonly available, it would be hard to exactly reproduce it on a plotter. But in principle, they all are plottable. Oh, if you have like a laser cutter, you can get like black metal. And if you laser on it, it turns white. And that works really well. It's very accurate. So you can definitely plot bright on dark things that way if you have a laser unit.
That's cool. I think Johannes has a laser unit, right?
Yes, I have. I can make one for you, Peter, if you want, and I send it to you. You just choose one piece and I will make it on a metal plate or also on black stone. It looks perfect. Black stone and cutting white on top. It's great.
That's really cool. I don't think I made any yet, which are white on black, but I'll do that later and I will pick some. We'll talk about it. That's a great idea.
That's so cool. And I also noticed that you let people or let artists choose colors freely. And in your prior project, you, for this kind of look, you mostly stuck to monochrome, but you wanted to open it up a bit more?
Yeah, during the development, I had some people like beta test this framework, and yeah, I got a lot of requests for changing the color. I always do it in the black and white, these things, if they're plottable, because the plots are going to be in black and white. And yeah, therefore, I think it looks good. But I've also have gotten comments from Zankan personally telling me that I should add more colors to my plot. Maybe I will listen to him. And yeah, I decided to allow people to choose the background and foreground color. So mostly so they could give it a bit of a personal vibe if they wanted to. And yeah, some people really put the colors to good use. Stranger made a beautiful blue-white ocean seascape picture, which is completely not a valid SDF, by the way, but it looks absolutely stunning. And yeah, I'm happy that I chose for putting colors in, because it definitely adds a lot of variety to the whole collection. I was a bit afraid at first they won't exactly be plottable anymore with arbitrary colors. I'm also happy that I got the light inversion right, because the shading needs to invert if you use light colors on a dark background. And that is because that is not the usual way I developed my Ray Hatcher. It was a bit work to get it look really nice. Might be able to tweak it even nicer, but I didn't get around to that.
Yeah, and I noticed also Sankan made a green piece, of course. So that was nice to see. Fits his style.
The colors, they're a great addition. And I'm happy that nobody has chosen green purple yet. Maybe I shouldn't have said that now, but yeah.
Uh-oh. Yeah, let's see. If someone can make something beautiful with it. So. Yeah, let's see.
Yeah, not possible. Unless we make an overseen.
Okay.
Do you have a final trick to share with us? For instance, how to create these amazing landscapes or city scenes, what Stranger, for instance, created? I find them really fascinating.
Oh, all right. The city that Stranger made, I think he started with, like, you make a grid of rectangle cubes using the modulo operator. But then you also use the floor function in the proper way to calculate the number, the cell index of every rectangular block. And then you can give these rectangular blocks a random height depending on the RI function, which gives you random numbers on a grid. It's not that easy to explain just with voice. But yeah, and then you just have to draw in all the windows and have to separate it into two parts. So you can put a river in the middle, but you can do that with the absolute function, just using mirroring. And then there's that bridge. The bridge is really good. So that's made out of probably a rectangular solid bridge shape, and then with repeated cylinders cut out to make the arches. Yeah, it's all about this thing that I called a constructive solid geometry, about adding and subtracting shapes together in order to make new shapes. And I'm not saying that it was easy, that city, not at all. I think a Stranger hit the character limit for that one and wanted to add more detail. Oh, but maybe it's a good thing to share this trick. So with SDFs, this is a very general concept that you may not like math, but SDFs are actually like math light, in the sense that you don't care about what the meaning of the function is exactly. You care about what the graph of that function looks like. I can recommend everybody to use the website Graph Toy, which is also made by Inigo Quiles, by the way. It's a great website to explore the graphs of functions, and it's got a lot of built-in functions similar to my framework, so you can match it up. And the important part is that it is basically the shape of these graphs that do certain things in your SDF. it doesn't matter that like the absolute function always returns the positive value of something. No, what matters is that it looks like a diagonal line going down and then a diagonal line going up when you view the graph. If you look at the identity function, which is like just a diagonal line, and you mirror that diagonal line, you get the shape of the absolute function. So it's really not that you have to remember what are all these functions for. It's more that you have to remember what do they look like. This is why the trick by Klaus Wilk that he explained in his article with subtracting the clamped value of a coordinate. If you plot that function in GraphToy, it will become hopefully obvious why that operation does what it does. So I can recommend try to think about the shape of your functions and not so much about the meaning, and take parts of your SDFs and plot them in GraphToy, see what they look like to get some insight.
Yeah, thank you for sharing all these insights and tools. We'll make sure to link these to our show notes in the final edit of the podcast. I actually have to say that I really enjoy you reviewing these outputs. Maybe we could do like a weekly show of Peter reviewing outputs from the universal ray hatcher. So that would be kind of entertaining and also educating, actually, for people just to learn the tricks.
This is so fascinating, and it's so great to be here and see this, these innovations, these great art pieces getting minted, and all of the community engagement. Like, it was so amazing in FXHash Discord. The main channel was renamed to SDF Discussion for a few days. I love that. It was perfect. And yeah, I think we will definitely continue to watch mints and discuss SDFs. Let's wrap up at this point. Any final things you want to mention, Peter, about the project or anything?
Well, I guess I want to thank everybody here in the audience who has either spent work, any effort trying to figure out SDFs or mint stuff, or maybe they have so far just been beta testing the framework. You're all the people that made this really great. Huge thanks go out to all the people. I couldn't have done that without you. There's no way I could have made 200 SDFs in a week. And especially of this quality, it is absolutely amazing. Yeah, thanks for the whole community. You're all really great.
And last but not least, a big thank you to you, Peter, for making this project and to open this up for the community to use. That's been so great. And yes, thank you for joining the show and talking with us. And until next time, we'll see you in Discord.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. I had a great time.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And thank you, Peter, for being so generous with sharing everything that you know and to inspire everyone. It's a really amazing project. Bye, everyone.
Yes, thank you. And I will give you a laser cutting if you just write me. Thank you.
Great. Bye-bye, everyone. Time. Dusting. Refill. Dusting. Refill.